Chapter 12, we'll begin there, where we left off. We have seen in the last chapter, to bring us up to this particular king, the last chapter left us in, actually, into the southern kingdom. And again, remember, going back and forth, jumping from the north to the south, you can kind of lose track. We were in the south when Athaliah had taken over and killed all the descendants. She thought she killed all of them. She missed one. And he was raised up as a king. Jehoiada the priest kind of guided him and led him. And later on we'll see what exactly happened under him. But in verse 1 of chapter 12, it says, "In the seventh year of Jehu, Jehoash became king and reigned 40 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Zibiah of Beersheba. And Jehoash did what was right in the sight of the Lord all the days in which Jehoiada the priest instructed him. But the high places were not taken away, and the people still sacrificed and burned incense on the high places." Now, if you were wandering through a cemetery, and it's actually kind of a neat thing to do from time to time, and read some of the messages, some of the epitaphs on the gravestones of the people, you really learn a lot. It really is, it's kind of a lesson in eternity. As you know, these people lived. They lived their life, they raised their kids, they did their thing, and now on their tombstone is what's remembered of them, the last few words, the monuments and records of old. Well, in a way, this is kind of a similar thing, especially when we get into First Chronicles, you'll see a lot of, in 1st and 2nd Chronicles, this one statement: he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, or he did not do what was right in the eyes of the Lord. I mean, their whole life is summed up in that one phrase. And it kind of makes me wonder what my life will be summed up as. You know, it's kind of a frightening thing. You know, will it be one of these conditional ones where he did what was right in the sight of the Lord, and then there's a condition on it, all the days of Jehoiada the priest? Because that's exactly what we see in this guy, Jehoash or Joash. We see really kind of a lack of maintenance. Now, under Jehoiada, he was a strong leader. He just obviously was only 6 years old, so he was really a puppet king at first. The priest Jehoiada, godly man, was in charge, leading him. He had a good, wise counsel around him. And in verse 4 it says, Joash said to the priests, "All the money of the dedicated gifts that are brought into the house of the Lord, each man's census money, each man's assessment money, and all the money that a man purposes in his heart to bring into the house of the Lord, let the priests take it themselves, each from his constituency, and let them repair the damages of the temple wherever any dilapidation is found." So even at a young age, he has a heart to the things of God. You know, you can't just tear down the false altars without building up the true altar. And that's what he attempts to do. "Now it was so by the 23rd year of King Jehoash that the priests had not repaired the damages of the temple." Talking about procrastination. I mean, he's, you know, one of his early messages for them, they've been saving all this money, so he thought. He hadn't been paying attention, really watching that closely. He turns his attention again, finds 23 years into his kingdom, they still haven't done that. Probably not good accounting procedures. And without good accounting procedures, the money goes here and there and can happen anywhere. You know, you have to take good care of the money when it's entrusted to you. "Well, so King Jehoash called Jehoiada the priest and the other priests and said to them, 'Why have you not repaired the damages of the temple?'" Here he's rebuking the old guy. He says, "Now therefore, do not take any more money from your constituency, but deliver it for repairing the damages of the temple." So now he's put a moratorium on their what they receive. He's put the word out, all the money's going to go toward the temple. And what he did is he took a chest, bored a hole, Jehoiada the priest took a chest, bored a hole in its lid, and set it beside the altar on the right side as one comes into the house of the Lord. And the priests who kept the door and put there all the money that was brought into the house of the Lord. So what it was, whenever they saw there was much money in the chest, the king's scribe and the high priest came up, put it in bags, counted the money that was found in the house of the Lord, and they gave the money which had been appointed or apportioned into the hands of those who did the work, who had the oversight of the house of the Lord, and they paid it out to the carpenters, the builders who worked on the house of the Lord. So they've got the building fund going, and they're building the temple, repairing things that need to be repaired. To the masons, the stone cutters, for the buying of timber, the hewn stone, to repair the damage of the house of the Lord, for all that was paid out to repair the temple. However, there were not made for the house of the Lord basins of silver, trimmers, sprinkling bowls, trumpets, any articles of gold or articles of silver from the money that was brought into the house of the Lord. But they gave that to the workmen, and they repaired the house of the Lord with it. Now, moreover, they did not require an account from the men in whose hand they delivered the money to be paid to the workmen, for they dealt faithfully. So they found some really good faithful workers. They didn't have to look that closely into it. They knew that it was being done. They could see, obviously, the fruit of the thing being accomplished. And the money from the trespass offering and the money from the sin offering was not brought into the house of the Lord. It belonged to the priests. So only those things that were offered up as sin and trespass offerings were the apportion to the priests, and everything else was going toward the house of the Lord. So Jehoash gets back one on the priests. You know, he deals with them because they've been slothful, and now it probably got pretty lean for them. Now, we don't really know anything else from this record of why the next portion comes to us. But 2 Chronicles 24 tells us how he fell back under the influence of men after Jehoiada the priest died. 2 Chronicles reveals to us that when the Jehoiada the priest died, he basically brought to himself counsel that was not wise, that was not good. He turned away from following the Lord, and it was not a very a long time before Hazael, king of Syria, went up and fought against Gath and took it. So Hazael set his face to go up to Jerusalem. Now, Hazael was pretty tough. He'd already come all the way from the north. He really hit hard the northern kingdom. He totally raided everything from them. Now he's coming down through the Philistine land, and now he's going to come up to Jerusalem from another direction. And when we're there in Israel, it's kind of an interesting thing. You'll sit on the in the area that where Samson grew up. You can look down into the land of the Philistines. You can see some of the cities there in the what is now the Gaza Strip. And you can also look back up into the hills of Judea. So it's not a very far distance to take this. Now he's heading up toward Jerusalem. Jehoash, king of Judah, gets on his face and seeks the Lord? No. He took all the sacred things that his fathers, Jehoshaphat and Jehoram and Azariah, kings of Judah, had dedicated in his own sacred things, all the gold found in the treasuries of the house of the Lord and in the king's house, and sent them to Hazael, king of Syria. Then he went away from Jerusalem. So he bought his way out of it. Instead of seeking the Lord, that the Lord might give him victory over Hazael, he just decides to play the political route and gets out of it, but he loses all the treasures. What an interesting life. Here is an interesting picture. I see this guy as one who was influenced. But the influence on his life, though it was good for most of his life, it revealed that he didn't have a foundation for himself. There are people that are followers that, you know, will do what people influence them to do. And of course, if you are and you have a propensity to follow people, it's your responsibility to get around people that are good to follow and make sure that those people that are influencing you are godly people. That only follows to reason. Here it kind of reveals that Jehoash did not have a heart for him, for the Lord himself, but that he kind of followed the policy that Jehoiada set because it seemed to work out pretty good. Now, if you have a good policy, honesty is certainly a good policy, but people who are honest and do good in business because it's good for business are quite different from those who are honest even when it hurts and are doing the right thing because it honors the Lord. You see, there's a totally different motivation. You know, you may be a good business person. Someone may do, you know, the right thing, and yet what is the motivation behind it? Here, the motivation, obviously, all of Jehoash's life was to do good, to follow the Lord, to do good for the temple, because it seemed to be a good policy that pleased the people and kept them in line, and his kingdom seemed to be getting along. But now that influence is gone, the real heart of this man is revealed. Kind of like, you know, this type of backsliding doesn't happen overnight.
Maybe you don't even see the traces of that person's life at first.
But perhaps their heart slowly gets away.
You wake up late one morning, and it's only one morning. No big deal. And that's how sometimes we treat little bits and pieces that come in. Like Proverbs 24, I went by the field of the slothful and the vineyard of the man lacking sense. And there I took counsel and watched. And he says, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hand to rest, and your poverty will come like a vagabond and your want like an armed man. Those things that slowly creep up on you. And this is what happened to him. And eventually where he was really at was revealed. Full commitment is needed. No one can serve two masters. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. And when Jehoiada died, the Judean officials tried to speak with him. He listened to them. And Zechariah the prophet, according to Chronicles, comes and tries to reveal what's going on and rebuke him. And he had him killed. He had the prophet of the Lord killed, actually the son of Jehoiada, one of the priests. And this was how, in Zechariah, as he was dying, he says, let the Lord look on and repay this. Here this Jehoiada the priest had been so faithful to him all his life, leading him, and now he ends up killing his own son when Jehoiada had died. Incredible. So Hazael humbled him. He lost battles. He lost treasures. All because of a stubbornness. And of course, his ultimate end, the rest of the acts of Joash and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of Kings of Judah? And his servants arose and made a conspiracy and killed Joash in the house of the Millo, which goes down to Silla. For Josachar, the son of Shimeath, and Jozabad, the son of Shomar, his servants, struck him. So he died, and they buried him with his fathers in the city of David. Then Amaziah, his son, reigned in his place. So a sad, sad ending to a man who had a lot of potential. Now in the 23rd year of Joash, the son of Azariah, king of Judah, Jehoash, the son of Jehu, became king over Israel and Samaria and reigned 17 years. So now not only do we have just like Joram and Jehoram, we've got Joash and Jehoash, and the same spelling goes to both kings in the north and the south. But now we're going to the north. It's a different king, same name, different king. So don't get confused. Well, he did evil in the sight of the Lord. You'll never see in the northern kingdom where a king did right what was right in the eyes of the Lord. They were totally backslidden. Well, he did evil in the sight of the Lord and followed the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who had made Israel sin. He did not depart from them. Then the anger of the Lord was aroused against Israel, and he delivered them into the hand of Hazael, king of Syria, and into the hand of Ben-Hadad, the son of Hazael, all their days. Remember Elijah's original prophecy, which Elisha had confirmed about Hazael, that he would just be a terror to Israel. Well, it certainly happened. So Jehoaz pleaded with the Lord. You know, he's in a hurting way. When you're in a hurting way, your prayers seem to be more intense. And he pleaded with God. The Lord listened to him, for he saw the oppression of Israel because the king of Syria oppressed them. And the Lord gave Israel a deliverer so that they escaped from under the hand of the Syrians, and the children of Israel dwelt in their tents as before. Nevertheless, they did not depart from the sins of the house of Jeroboam, who had made Israel sin, but walked in them, and the wooden images also remained in Samaria. So the compromised worship, he doesn't do anything about that. His devotion was like the prophets would say, as the morning dew, which went away early. Now, it's fascinating to see during this time which prophets actually were prophesying. And I have it written down here because sometimes it's a little difficult to remember which prophet is which. During the time of Joash, Joel was actually prophesying. Amos was prophesying during Jeroboam too. And Hosea was prophesying. And Jonah was the first to go to the Gentiles, although he wasn't entirely happy about it. But these were the guys who were contemporaries in this period of time. So you can put those prophetical guys in this period. They were there out there prophesying, giving their ministry. These kings would listen, but then wouldn't listen. We'd be hardened. And you can see the hardness of the people. The prophets were considered to be a little bit offbeat. Most people didn't listen to them. Those in the court, you know, and the political power kind of just tolerated these prophets, you know, and brought them in when the people liked them and used them. And then when they, you know, the people were not of the right mind for that, then they would just be discarded. So that gives you an idea of the times. But this is where the people were at. So he left an army. He left of the army of Jehoaz only 50 horsemen and 10 chariots and 10,000 foot soldiers, for the king of Syria had destroyed them and made them like the dust at threshing. So this verse seems to be kind of out of place. This was during the humbling period. And then Jehoaz, once he humbled himself, then the Lord helped him. Well, the rest of Acts of Jehoaz and all that he did and all his might, are they not written in the books of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel, which we'll get to? So Jehoaz rested with his fathers. They buried him in Samaria, and Joash, his son, reigned in his place. In the 37th year of Joash, king of Judah, Jehoash, the son of Jehoaz, became king over Israel and Samaria and reigned 16 years. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord, and he did not depart from all the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat. And this gets monotonous after a while, who made Israel sin, but he walked in them. Jeroboam left a legacy. You know, the influence of one guy that just stands out so incredible. I mean, when you think of how this all carries down, how it all happened, right on down through Ahab, and then, the different guys that are coming down. Now Ahab's all out of the picture, and Jehu and his descendants took over, and these are the descendants of Jehu, and eventually he'll be utterly wiped out, and a new regime will begin. But you know, what strikes me is the foundation. Everything goes back to Jeroboam, the sin that he committed, the compromise. And that's really all it was. It was a little thing. It was a little compromise. It was, we want to worship God. We want to follow Jehovah. We want to do all the things of the priests. We want to have all this stuff. The only thing they didn't want to do was go down to Jerusalem. Well, that seemed like a trivial matter. Obviously, we can't go to Jerusalem. The kingdom's divided. So let's worship here. And they set high places up to worship. And then eventually, they used the calves as a symbol of God, which broke that first commandment. Thou shalt not make any graven images. The second commandment. And I see how that all fits together. It's just one little thing after another. You know, I think it's really important to watch your own heart. Because I find there's stages in my own life where, you know, I'll get a little thick and I'm not really listening to the little signals the Lord is sending me. And I'm busy about doing the work of the ministry, albeit I'm not really paying attention to the signals the Lord may be sending me. And then, you know, the nuts get squeezed down a little bit tighter and something happens and it really gets my attention. And I'm, all of a sudden it makes me realize, Lord, I haven't been listening to you. And I get kind of in a little spiritual panic. Lord, forgive me. And I get my heart right. But you see, that's the key. We really need to have that tender heart. Because the natural tendency of our heart is just to go off. Is to get off track. It's our second nature. It's our first nature, actually. Our second nature, born again, tries to keep us on the right track. You know, when I think of the descendants of godly people and the legacy they leave, and also we're looking at the legacy of ungodly people, but one of the most incredible families to me is Jonathan and Sarah Edwards, who they had 11 children. Now, that was popular to have that many kids in those days. Oftentimes you'd lose one or two of them to sicknesses or something, and so you really had to have a large family. Many times our agricultural family needed more people to work in the farms. Well, they had a large family, and he was a very powerful preacher in the 1700s. And his wife, Sarah, homeschooled every one of their children, made all of their children clothes by hand, grew all their own food. I mean, she orchestrated the whole family. She was really the house manager. While he was out preaching, she managed the whole household. And orchestrated all these kids in order. She had them all disciplined and trained. They did an interesting study. The 11 children, the descendants of the Edwards family, they were able to find 500 descendants. And among those descendants, the most remarkable things, they had so many doctors, so many lawyers, some senators. They have a president, a vice president of the United States. They had tons of people who were in service. Many of them went into ministry. I mean, their family, those 11 kids, they impacted the world in an incredible way. You never know what kind of legacy your kids will leave. leaving them that strong teaching. And then when you look at the descendants of people who are not following the Lord, you know, some of the most horrible, ignoble people in this world were, you know, had horrible upbringings, raised by prostitutes. And when you look at the cost of society, to society, of people that are in drugs, you know, all the alcohol-related deaths on the road, the drug-related crimes, the diseases carried by people that are immoral. I mean, the cost to society is so incredible. Here you've got the descendants of one family that's giving back to society, blessing society, advancing society. Then you have the descendants of others who are tearing society down. Boy, does it matter how we raise our kids? It sure does. And here are these guys. They did not have the right heart. He did evil in the sight of the Lord the same way. And then his acts are written also in the books of the Chronicles. And he rested with his fathers, verse 13, and buried in Samaria with the kings of Israel. Now Elisha had become sick with the illness of which he would die. Even the great prophet would succumb to some illness in his old age, and he would die. And Joash the king of Israel came down to him and wept over his face. Now realize that though the southern kingdom had some good kings, were basically on the right track for the most part, with exceptions. To the north, the wicked kings, God sent the prophets to them. You know, he was so merciful. He's so eager for them to turn. So often we have this picture of God, he's so ready to wipe us out when we blow it. That's not true. He is ever eager that we would come and turn and repent, so that he might bless us again. He's so eager to fill us, direct us, lead us, teach us. And he's, you know, the prophet Elisha, one of the most powerful guys sent to the north. And Joash came down and wept over his face. So my father, the chariots of Israel and their horsemen. He realized the strength of the nation was wrapped up in this man. You're the real chariot. You're the real horsemen of Israel. And Elisha then said to him, take a bow, some arrows. And he took a bow, some arrows. He said to the king of Israel, put your hand on the bow. And he put his hand on it. And Elisha put his hands on the king's hands. And he said, open the east window. And he opened it. And Elisha said, shoot. And he shot. And he said, the arrow of the Lord's deliverance and the arrow of deliverance from Syria, for you must strike the Syrians at Aphek until you have destroyed them. Then he said, take the arrows. And he took them. And he said to the king of Israel, strike the ground. And he struck three times and stopped. And the man of God was angry with him and said, you should have struck five or six times. Then you would have struck Syria till you had destroyed it. But now you'll strike Syria only three times. You know, I think in reviewing these words from this morning, I have to ask a good question. What arrows have we shot? Have we taken the effort to shoot any arrows, to conquer those enemies of the Lord? Jesus said, shoot. Ask anything in my name and I'll give it to you. Ask anything in my name. What an incredible promise. When we're willing to be his disciples. Now he said that to his disciples. And that's an important point. This is not a magic thing that someone can just apply to their life. It's one who has taken up their cross and is following him. You have the incredible promise, ask. Ask that you have not asked me anything. Ask that your joy might be full. You know, up till now, Jesus said to his disciples when he was there in that night before he was betrayed, he says, up till now, you know, you've not asked me anything. Ask. James tells us, you have not because you ask not. I think of that particular thing there, just the possibility, the opportunity. Just shoot those arrows. Just be faithful to shoot them. Just be faithful to walk in obedience, and you're going to be amazed what will happen. Elisha here is a type of Christ. In his last breath, mercy. Well, you'll only strike Syria three times now. The limited... God's sovereign will was there for the perfect victory, but the limitation because of his response. Well, then Elisha died. They buried him after the raiding. They buried him, and the raiding bands from Moab invaded the land in the spring of the year. And it was as they were burying a man, this later on, but the writer here includes this, they spied a band of raiders, and they put the man in the tomb of Elisha. So they were burying this guy, you know, and they saw some raiders come and thought, what are we going to do? You know, just throw this guy in the tomb of Elisha and get out of here before we get attacked. Well, when they put the man in the tomb of Elisha, when the man was let down and touched the bones of Elisha, he revived and stood on his feet. Now, Elisha was such a perfect type of Christ that this amazing event took place, that even in his death, his dead bones, when they came into contact with this man, they brought life. And it's amazing because Jesus in his death brought life. And here is a perfect type of Jesus. Here you find an interesting picture. And Hazael, king of Syria, then oppressed Israel all the days of Jehoash, but the Lord was gracious to them and had compassion on them and regarded them because of his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and would not yet destroy them nor cast them from his presence. So he's using this wicked king of Syria to try to stir them up. And, you know, it's going, aren't you guys getting tired of beating up yet? You want to come to me? You know, kind of thing. I'm here. When you call upon me, I'll answer you. But it's amazing how hard the heart can get. Now Hazael, the king of Syria, died, and Ben-Hadad, his son, reigned in his place. And Jehoash, son of Jehoaz, recaptured from the hand of Ben-Hadad, the son of Hazael, the cities which he had taken out of the hand of Jehoaz, his father, by war. Three times Joash defeated him and recaptured the cities of Israel. So he got his three victories, got the cities back, but it was oh so temporary. Now in the second year of Joash, the son of Jehoash, king of Israel, Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, became king. So the servants conspired against Joash in the southern kingdom. Remember, they killed the king after Jehoiada had died, and Jehoash had even killed Jehoiada's son for trying to rebuke him and tell him what to do with his life. Then his own servants conspired against him. And so Amaziah, his son, Jehoash's son from the south, was made king. Is that all clear? Trying to keep these guys clear sometimes is difficult. Well, he was 25 years old, and when he became king, he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Jehoaddan of Jerusalem. Now, when you notice, with very, very few exceptions, when the mother's name is noted, he's a good king. It's fascinating how that works out. What is the reason for bringing this out? Why is it that when the mother's name is mentioned, it seems like this guy's going to be a good guy? Was it the influence that she had on him? Was she noted as a woman of God who followed the Lord and her name was put down in remembrance? She raised a kid that followed the Lord with his whole heart. I think it's fascinating. I mean, it really does put the family in that high role that it is. Don't expect that the Sunday school is going to make the real difference in your kid's life. That's just frosting on the cake to what you're doing at home. The home is the foundation. And here, his mother's name, Jehoaddan of Jerusalem, well known. And he did what was right in the sight of the Lord, yet not like his father David. He did everything like his father Joash had done. So he did right, and kind of like, not like David, but like Joash, but a little bit better than Joash. And he did what was right. Now, however, the high places were not taken away, and the people still sacrificed and burned incense on the high places. He couldn't seem to root out that particular problem, and the people, for their own convenience sake. Well, it happened as soon as the kingdom was established in his hand that he executed his servants who had murdered his father, the king. So he put these guys to death who'd conspired against his father. But the children of the murderers he did not execute, according to what is written in the book of the law of Moses, in which the Lord commanded, saying, the father shall not be put to death for the children, nor shall the children be put to death for the fathers, but a person shall be put to death for his own sin. Now, there's a big gap between this chronologically and the next passage. We know that from the Chronicles. But he killed 10,000 Edomites in the Valley of Salt and took Selah by war called its name Jokdeel to this day. Amaziah then sent messengers to Joash, the son of Jehoaz, the son of Jehu, king of Israel, saying, "Come, let us face one another in battle." Now, according to the Chronicles, this is a very interesting thing. Amaziah had a good heart. He wanted to follow the Lord. He was very zealous for the Lord. And now he's just had an incredible victory over the Edomites, whom the Lord helped him overcome. In fact, it was a very interesting thing of just that particular battle that we'll look at in the Chronicles. 2 Chronicles 25 describes that. But in this particular war, you know, he got really encouraged. The Lord helped him. He won. But now he is going to pick a fight with the guy from the north. He says, "Come, let us face one another in battle." And Jehoash, king of Israel, sent to Amaziah, king of Judah, saying, "The thistle that was in Lebanon said to the cedar that was in Lebanon, 'Give your daughter to my son as wife.' And a wild beast that was in Lebanon passed by and trampled the thistle." And you're probably going, huh? This is kind of a real mock to this king. He's saying, you know, you don't even rate as a thistle compared to me, a cedar tree. And you think that you want to even fight? Get real. He says, "Oh, this wild beast will trample you." So he's really mocking this Amaziah guy out. But he does say something very interesting. Verse 10. He says, "You have indeed defeated Edom, and your heart has lifted you up. Glory in your success and stay at home, for why should you meddle with trouble so that you fall, you and Judah with you?" Now, this was actually some good advice. Why meddle with trouble? And you know, isn't it interesting how we can get very confident in ourselves after we have a few victories? After we sense the Lord working in our life and we think that now He's put the stamp on everything. So everything we touch will be golden. And so now our heart is lifted up with pride and we look on those other poor Christians. There's something wrong with them. They're just not quite there yet. You know, they're not on the level that I've attained spiritually. I've had this unique experience. God has touched my heart. And so now everything I touch is going to be turned into gold. And you know, this is a very interesting thing that can happen to any of our hearts. Amaziah's heart was lifted up. He was feeling his oats. He figures, all right, I'm going to go get the north. You know, they beat us up a few times in the past, but now we're strong. We just beat the Edomites. And we'll take these guys on. And so Jehoiada says, "Hey, you better stay home. You know, the cedar, the thistle that was in Lebanon, you know, got trampled by the wild beast." He says, "Glory in your success and stay at home." But Amaziah would not heed. Why would he not heed? Well, it doesn't tell us here, unfortunately, but it does tell us in 2 Chronicles 25. He would not heed, for it came from God that he might give them into the hand of their enemies, because they sought the gods of Edom. This is what happened. When Amaziah got back from beating up the Edomites with the strength of the Lord, he captured their gods. It's kind of funny to think about capturing somebody's gods, but they, you know, they had their idols which represented their gods, and so he went into their temple there in Edom, grabbed all their gods, and normally you'd take them as treasures of gold and silver, but instead of doing that and just melting down the gold and the silver, whatever it was, he set them up in the temple and began to worship them. Now, why would he do that? Why under what would possess him? I mean, you've just beaten their gods. Now, why would you worship them? Well, the idea that was very prevalent in that time was that the gods looked over local territories. And so he figured that he would expand his territory. If he started worshiping these gods, he'd gain more control over that whole land. And so that was his policy. He basically just obviously didn't have it together there with the Lord. And so now, because he is a godly man, making a very foolish decision, it's possible. Godly people can do some pretty ungodly things, and this is what he does. Well, God then desires to then, you know, humble him. Now, how does he do this? Fascinating insight. Because this is very interesting how this happens with you and I. When we get lifted up in pride, beware of pride. It is the most devastating thing in your life. it will bring you down faster than anything else. Pride goes before the fall. When you're lifted up in pride, the Lord will then allow you to suffer the consequences of your own choices. And here, the king of Judah, Amaziah, feeling his strength and being proud, now is going to pick a fight to the north, and it's happening because God put that in his heart to fight the north. It came from him, from God, so that he would be humbled before his enemies, so that he would be humbled and laid low because of his pride. Well, Amaziah would not heed. Therefore, Jehoash, king of Israel, went out. So he and Amaziah, king of Judah, faced one another at Beth Shemesh, which belongs to Judah. And Judah was defeated by Israel, and every man fled to his tent. And Jehoash, king of Israel, captured Amaziah, king of Judah, the son of Joash, the son of Azahiah, at Beth Shemesh. And he went to Jerusalem and broke down the wall of Jerusalem from the gate of Ephraim to the corner gate, 400 cubits, which would be about 600 feet. And he took all the gold and the silver and the articles that were found in the house of the Lord and in the treasuries of the king's house and hostages and returned to Samaria. Irreplaceable treasures lost because of meddling in an affair that he shouldn't have been. Putting himself in a position he shouldn't have been in. Because ultimately the pride that was there. You know, when I think of how this relates in some respects, because of the pride, he got sucked into a trap. I recall my senior high school wrestling year, in which wrestling was my God. I really wasn't following the Lord in any way. I totally walked away from God. I had my justifications for doing so. I didn't believe, you know, and I tell my grandmother, who was constantly praying for me, don't bother, you know, I know where I'm going. You know, I have the world, you know, by the tail. I'm going to get whatever I want, et cetera, et cetera. And I remember at the stage in the season, I was doing quite well. I was undefeated and getting a lot of pins. I was looking to the state meet. And I met a girl at a party. And one thing led to another. It led to a relationship that you know, shouldn't have been. And I look back now, and I didn't know it at the time, but God actually used this relationship to bring me into a very humbling position, eventually getting mono, going into the state meet, having been totally weakened by mono, ended up taking fourth in the state instead of first, which I was seated number one. And it was a devastating blow. I mean, it was a blow. But I look back on that, and that humbling was all a part of God's plan. And he used the woman, he used the girl in my life, he used the relationship that shouldn't have been. But all those decisions I was making, he was just setting me up to fall so that I'd be broken and come back and seek him. That was his mercy. Amaziah was a good man, and he did good all the days of his life, because even though in his weakness here, he learned the lesson. I mean, that's the key. Learn the lesson. And he came back to the Lord according to the scriptures. And he had a heart that came back to the Lord. But he was humbled and he lost treasures that could not be replaced. I think of teens. In their pride, perhaps, thinking that they can do anything. They're invincible. Getting involved in relationships. Losing treasures that are irreplaceable. Virginity can't be replaced. Your purity. It's very, very difficult to replace those treasures. And certainly there is an illustration here with the meddling with trouble. But what happened? It was all a result of the pride, and then he was putting himself in a position that he thought he could handle. So he took all the gold, the silver. He took hostages and returned to Samaria. Now the rest of the acts of Joash, what he did, his might, and how he fought with Amaziah, king of Judah, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? So Jehoash rested with his fathers and was buried in Samaria with the kings of Israel, and Jeroboam his son reigned in his place. Now this is Jeroboam 2. Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, lived 15 years after the death of Jehoash, the son of Jehoash, king of Israel. And the rest of the acts of Amaziah, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah? So he did have his act together. Unfortunately, they made a conspiracy against him in Jerusalem, and he fled to Lachish, but they sent after him to Lachish and killed him, and they brought him on horses, and he was buried at Jerusalem with his father in the city of David. And all the people of Judah took Azariah, who was 16 years old, and made him king instead of his father Amaziah. And he built Eleth and restored it to Judah after the king rested with his fathers. Now in the 15th year of Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, became king in Samaria and reigned 41 years. So this is Jeroboam too. Long reign, very powerful guy. In fact, in secular history, he is well noted to be a very strong leader who gave us strength and a stability. It's kind of like a calm before the storm, before Assyrians come and totally take away the northern kingdom. Jeroboam too is there. Well, he did evil in the sight of the Lord. He didn't depart from all the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel sin. But he restored the territory of Israel from the entrance of Hamath to the Sea of Arabah, according to the word of the Lord God of Israel, which he had spoken through his servant Jonah, the son of Amittai, the prophet who was from Gath-Hepher. Different Jonah. For the Lord saw that the affliction of Israel was very bitter, and whether bond or free, there was no helper for Israel. And the Lord did not say that he would blot out the name of Israel from under heaven, but he saved them by the hand of Jeroboam, son of Joash. Now, it's interesting, this record, because Jeroboam really was not a good guy, and yet God had mercy on them. The problem with mercy given to bad guys. Okay, let's talk about that for a second. In a way, there is a dual purpose here. Jeroboam is the case of one prospering while doing evil. The northern kingdom grows strong and rich, even in moral decay. And Jonah was merciful, or God was merciful, even allowed Jonah to prophesy success to them. Amos and Hosea prophesied to them the goodness of God, often mistaken by people to mean approval of lifestyle. And here is what's happening with Jeroboam. Because God is apparently blessing in the land, they are even more hardened to do evil. They're more hardened in their life. And what happens, it's almost like they're prepared. They're fattened as an ox led to the slaughter. They're being fattened up. In a way, God is giving them over. He's saying, all right, you want to live that way? Then I'm not going to bother you anymore. I'm not going to disrupt you with harsh messages from the prophets. I'm not going to harass you. I'm not going to bring all these enemies against you. I'll let you grow. I'll let you prosper. I'll let you be strong. But you know, that has got to be the most dangerous thing. Hey, it is dangerous for you to prosper and to feel great while you're doing wrong. It's dangerous for you to have no conscience and that you think everything's fine when you're sinning. Because you are being set up. You know, God will receive those children and he'll scourge them. He'll discipline those whom he loves. But if he's not disciplining you, that's a scary sign. There are times when I get that fear in my heart. Lord, let me not get so far out there that you just let me go. But keep me simple. Keep me humble. You know, I fear being put on the shelf. I don't fear losing my salvation. That's not the subject. But I do fear being put on a shelf. I do fear the Lord removing me because I'm no longer usable. And he needs to find somebody who's humble and simple that he can use. That's a healthy fear to have. Fear the Lord is clean. Fear the Lord is good. Fear the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. But unfortunately, things are going to be happening now for the bringing down of these various kings and to the north. But in the meantime, the rest of the acts of Jeroboam, all that he did, his might, how he made war, how he recaptured for Israel from Damascus and Hamath what had belonged to Judah, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? So Jeroboam rested with his fathers, the kings of Israel, and Zechariah his son reigned in his place. This is not the same Zechariah that's in our Bible, the prophet who wrote the book of Zechariah. Well, we're going to stop there. I don't want to get into the next king because he's quite a story. He is quite a subject. The reign of Azariah in Judah, also known as Uzziah in the book of the Chronicles, but he's quite a character. Though not much is mentioned in the Kings about him, in the Chronicles there's a great deal about him. He was also a very powerful king. And some of these other lessons. Well, God wants us to learn from these guys. Pretty heavy messages, pretty heavy stuff that happens to these kings. But you know, the lesson that we get from this, follow the Lord with your heart, let him speak to you, and be obedient to him. He has designed the best way for your life. Obedience is the best way. There is no question about it. When you do your own thing, you know, it will not work. You might get a temporary blessing out of it, but ultimately, you're the one that's going to suffer in the long run. You know, it does pay to trust the Lord. Let him guide you, and he will lead you, and you have life and peace. But understand the war against the enemies of your flesh. Understand that it will be constant. And keep that simple, humble heart that the Lord might continue to bless, because he will guide the humble around the obstacles. He will guide you and he will lead you, and you have life and peace. But understand the war against the enemies of your flesh. Understand that it will be constant. And keep that simple, humble heart that the Lord might continue to bless, because he will guide the humble around the obstacles. Let's pray. Father, thank you for your word and your truth to us. Lord, thank you for sending your son. Even as we see all these men who failed to do what you've called them to do, and we hear failure after failure after failure, we feel a little intimidated. Lord, how can we walk? How can we make a difference? What's going to make us special? But Lord, you've given to us so much more than you gave to them. They had just a picture of what was to come. We have experienced your son. You've changed our heart. They had just the outer law to conform to. We have the inner power of your spirit, which can help us in the new heart you've given to us. So Lord, how much more should we walk? Such a great salvation given to us, Lord. Cause us to be obedient to you, trusting you.